Long hairs, welcome to another episode of Let It Ride. We are here to inspire confidence, develop masculinity, and foster community among guys growing their hair. So if you're a guy with long hair, you're in the right place. On this episode, we are honored to have with us a man whose name has become synonymous with exceptional strength, resiliency, and commitment. A man who needs no introduction in the world of CrossFit, but who deserves one of epic proportions here at the Long Hairs Global Headquarters. He is a husband, father, founder of Q-Town Fitness, co-owner of Strong Coffee Company, standout athlete at the world-renowned CrossFit Invictus. He's a six-times CrossFit Games competitor, a two-time team silver medalist. He's a powerhouse of endurance, a titan of the tresses with a deadlift that defies gravity and a heart that personifies grit, proving his might is as much about empathy and giving as it is about barbells and burpees. From the crucible grounds of the fiercest arenas across the greatest nation on this planet, he's a pillar to his community and an inimitable force of fitness. He's the one, the only, the true OG, Sir Dancer! Hell yeah. What's up, dog? Thank you. Busted that out this morning. Was pretty hyped on it.
Dog, I'm so stoked now.
Dude, hell yeah, man. We always try to, you know, fire it up here for the guests, you know.
I've never had an intro like that before. So you guys are different, man.
Dude, cool, man. Cool. Well, happy to hear that. So dude, you've been in the game a long time. 20 years. You've really made fitness a huge commitment to your life. Like pro athlete, all this stuff, involved in an amazing amount of companies like we just listed. But let's, like, can you take us back to the beginning? How did this all kick off for you?
Well, it's, thank you guys for having me, first of all. And before that intro, I was like, man, I rarely go on any podcasts where like I have no affiliation or like don't know the people at all. You guys don't know me. I don't know you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm curious how this is gonna go. So it looks like you know did a little research, and I've actually kind of followed you guys for a while too. So just thank you for that. That was super tight.
Hell yeah.
But it all kind of started back in small town Quincy, Illinois. Really, I think the foundation of where my life, it kind of the trajectory shifted, and it's really what is kind of made me who I am today, was in high school. And when I got to high school, as this little like 130 pound dude, I was brutally bullied, and I was spit on, I was pissed on, I was, like, I had my ass kicked regularly, verbally, just, yeah, it was, I wanted to be anyone but myself anywhere else, maybe even at some point in time, you know, even, like, I never considered taking my own life, but the thought of it was very appealing, just with how uncomfortable of a situation it was for me. I had no friends, and yeah, it was tough, and I was angry, and I was so angry that I decided I was going to start lifting weights.
Yes.
So I could beat everybody up.
Hell yeah.
And didn't really plan it out too well, because by time I had put on all the muscle mass that I thought would be needed to annihilate these dudes, they were gone. They were graduated. Okay. So, but I was still left with a significant amount of anger and about 100+ pounds of muscle mass that I put on throughout high school. So
yeah,
started at 130 pounds as a freshman, graduated at like 250.
Damn.
Became a pretty good athlete. I wasn't really athletic before this.
You were playing sports in high school too?
I was okay. Playing football. Okay. And before that, I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't getting picked anywhere near first. I was probably near the back of the, you know, the selections. And but just getting stronger and faster and bigger. It didn't even really matter how unathletic I was. I was just able to just manhandle everybody.
Yeah.
And I ended up becoming a pretty decent football player, went on to play collegiate football, didn't have a grand career there, kind of riddled with injuries and stuff, but I had the pleasure to play with my brother at, you know, pretty much the highest level you can
play in
football, or Division I football. And but still had a little bit of that, like, that kind of chip on my shoulder still there. And I don't know that there was like this pivotal moment where I had this aha moment where I was just able to relinquish a lot of that.
Yeah.
But there was just, it progressively kind of just had less and less of a stronghold over like my life, where it controlled me to the point where every action and behavior that came from me was coming from a place of anger. Which served me well in college and in high school.
Sure.
You know, playing football, I was just able to
tap into
run into people and destroy them and get rewarded for it, which was even better. Well, probably not for the best, but it was good for me at the time. At least I had an outlet and a way to kind of release it a little bit. I guess there maybe was a moment. I guess fast forward a couple years after college, I'm kind of trying to figure out who I am.
Sure.
I wasn't like suffering like some sort of like identity crisis, but I definitely didn't really know who I was without football. I'd been playing it for like 12 years, and it was really everything I ever knew. And that's just who I was. I was Sam Dancer, the football player. And so I started just kind of, all right, here we go. Let's go figure out what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I did what I thought you're supposed to do. I went and got a job.
Okay.
I was working sales. It lasted about like 2-3 months. And I was like, dog, I have got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's where I decided I was going to start a gym. And that's known as Q-Town Fitness today.
Okay, nice.
But I had this like really wild, radical, this might throw you guys off or even your listeners. I don't know how often you guys dive into like the, spiritual side of things, but I had what I would call now, at the time, I didn't know what to call it. I thought I was being like abducted by aliens or something, but I had a radical encounter with the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
I was out for a run, and I had been fasting for a few days for no spiritual reason at all.
Okay.
I was just fasting to just like do a cleanse, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think the combination of running really, really hard and not being fed led to some sort of like just really mystical, psychedelic, like natural experience. And straight up, dude, I saw my future, and it was being narrated to me. Not by anyone in body. It was just an audible voice that I could hear. And I saw, my future wife. I saw, myself getting baptized by my good friend, David. And, I saw this building that I was like instructed to go into. So I was instructed to go like do these three things.
Yeah.
And I would say not like in the moment, but that led to me being able to kind of relinquish a lot of anger that I was still harboring from just a traumatic time in high school. But like the combination of those two things, the terror of high school and that radical experience, the combination of those two have kind of are what I think catapulted me into the man I am today, and doing the things that I do now. And fitness for me started as a way to get revenge, but then it became just a passion of mine, and it's something that I was going to do for the rest of my life, regardless of whether I was ever going to be able to monetize it or be recognized for it. It's, you know, I even see around here, fitness seems to be an important aspect even of your guys' life. So just like that for me,
yeah.
Whether I started a hair tie company, like I was going to be doing that for the rest of my life. And fortunately for myself, it's led to a career path and one that I just like
awesome.
Thoroughly enjoy and am very passionate about.
So you followed up on the vision,
yeah.
if you will. Yeah. You did the three things. Was the building became the gym?
Yo, so okay. the building happened to be what I would consider like my school.
Okay.
It was, at the time, I only knew of it as this community college, which, and I guess a part of it was a church. And I'd never really been to church. I had this guy, David, who I mentioned, he asked me to go to church every Sunday in college. And I said, no,
yeah,
every time for 5 years, I said no. Unless there was like food or something. Sometimes I would like go to like events just to eat some donuts or yeah. something with him, but never really going to church or anything like that. So the building was a church, and where I had had this vision, and that's, there's a lot of wild stuff about that, but where I had the vision at, like on the ground, what, you know, I was running and it felt like I got thrown to the ground.
So you like passed out or like, yeah, pretty, okay.
Like
okay.
I had like a full body cramp. It felt like, but it released. I'm on all fours. My mouth is like pried open. I cannot move.
Holy
I'm
shit.
Like, I'm afraid, but oddly enough, feel kind of comforted.
Yeah.
Everything goes white. I can't see anything. I can't see the trees. I can't see the sidewalk. I can't see the cars. Everything goes white. And it just feels like I got something plugged into me that was force feeding me these intense visuals.
Yeah.
And after it went away and my body was like back to normal, I look up and there's the building that was in the vision. And so I walked into it and there was a church service going on. I was kind of wigged out by it at the time. So I sat in the very back on the floor and just like kind of listened. Nothing like really prophetic happened sure. while I was there. I didn't like hear anything that like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's all making sense now. And it honestly took a couple of years to really make any sense of that experience. So that today is, you know, a church that I still attend and I have lots of great friends that serve there and,
nice.
And lead the church. So it's, yeah, pretty wild.
Dude, crazy.
Yeah.
Heck, so, but did you know that your lady before or you found the wife?
Didn't know her. okay. I didn't. Ironically, we had never. I'm in a small town, dude. Like, uh-huh. you pretty much know everyone. My wife is 4 years older than me. I had only heard of her. I'd never met her, never seen her. But I had heard of her because she was such a force. On the soccer field. She's one of the greatest female soccer players of all time.
No way.
She holds a bunch of records in the high school she went to. She a bunch of records at Mizzou, went on to play in the top league and, you know, some awesome credentials there too. She got Citizen of the Year in Sweden, the same award Mother Teresa and Nelson Mandela got.
Wow.
She lead scorer, MVPs of the league, you name it. But I never saw her play. I only just heard of the name. I just yeah. knew she was a badass. I always heard she was kind of like just kind of rough around the edges yeah. and mean and like
so she's like a legend
yeah,
in your area.
She is a legend. yeah. And but in like the vision itself, I could only see my face and I could see her from behind. So I never saw her face. So this is wild. a couple days later, I get this like, another one of these encounters.
Yeah.
It happened to be while I was like stretching, and I was just holding these poses, these stretches for a really, really long time. And I mentioned these things because I think there might be something to it.
Yeah.
And I had another one where I was doing breath work unintentionally. I wasn't doing it to like to trip out and like have a psychedelic adventure.
Sure,
it
sure.
just happened.
Yeah.
And same thing with this stretching. I was just stretching. I wasn't doing it so I could induce. So I wish I could. Like, yeah. I wish I knew how to induce them. Well, I guess I do, but I wish I knew how to do it through stretching and breathing. I'm at church trying to take it all in, sitting down, and I get another one of these visuals. And the best way I have to describe it is like if you're getting an alert on your phone that says, you know, your package has arrived, yeah. or it's on its way. And I get this like alert that, hey, your package is on its way. And it's inquiring about the my wife, my future wife.
Yeah.
So that day, maybe that day, maybe the next day, through some friends, some mutual friends of ours, I got connected with this pro soccer player. I was training some pro athletes at the time just for like combine stuff, okay. or just to get fit in the off season.
Yeah.
And someone had mentioned to her that I would probably be one of her better options when she's coming home from Sweden to get some training in.
Okay.
And, we got connected. I didn't think anything of it. I, you know, a lot of the expectations I have in my head aren't even really, they're very stereotypical thoughts that I had about who I thought, you know, this girl was going to be. I wasn't expecting some like beautiful blonde, future wife type thing.
Yeah.
I guess to be completely honest and open about it, I was expecting like just this hard ass butchy chick.
Yeah.
Like that I was going to go train, yeah. for her, you know, for her off season. No intention of like, oh, I'm gonna like meet some hot chick.
Right. Yeah.
At all. Not even close. And when I walk in, this all ends up getting organized and arranged and scheduled, and I end up walking into the gym, and I'm like scanning, looking for who this, you know, where this person is. And no kidding, there's like this yellow tube of light surrounding this chick on a treadmill, and I see her from the back just like I did in the vision.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit,
it's her.
That's her. Yeah. I haven't even seen her face yet.
Oh, wow.
I haven't held her hand, we haven't kissed, we haven't hugged, we've never talked. I'm like, that's my wife. I'm like, wow, that's my wife,
dude. No way. 100% you felt like that, like
that
it's
was my wife,
dude.
And,
wow.
We had a great training session. I kept it all together. Yeah. I didn't tell her about all this stuff. I didn't want to freak her out. I waited like
might have been a little heavy.
Yeah, I waited like 4 days. Yeah.
okay.
But I end up spilling it to her.
Really?
I share the whole thing. Kind of wigs her out.
Yeah.
kind of wigs her out for sure. Because I'm telling her like, yo, we're supposed to get married.
She's so, like, dude, I just met you. Like, yeah. Relax.
So, yeah, for real. But it took her a couple weeks to like and be bought into this crazy idea. We kind of sorted it out over the next couple of months. She moved back to Sweden to finish up the last season before she retired. And we both agreed that during that time, it would give us a good idea. And mind you, I still think what I experienced, yeah. to a degree, was I didn't know really what to make of it.
Sure. But you're following it, which, yeah, is the key.
I had some conviction in it.
Yeah.
Really, some of it was borderline. I was afraid. I was like, what if that can happen to me? And I'm getting like audible request to follow through on these things, and it can do what it just did.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know what it could do if I wasn't obedient, to the call. And, so yeah, man. She finished up her season. She moved back home. We were in love. We got married.
Awesome.
Within like 2 weeks, we bounced out of Illinois. We moved to Ohio, started our professional CrossFit careers. Well, really starting my professional CrossFit career. She was retiring from sports, but being a pro soccer player, she could really do whatever she wanted to athletically. Yeah. Found out that she was actually pretty good too.
No way.
We got on a team together. We went and podiumed at the games. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. We got to compete a couple of other times together and podium together. And
wow.
She's now fully retired. She's a full-time mom. And she helps run our non-for-profit that we do.
Awesome.
And just kind of keep me organized.
Dude, what a story.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's freaking wild.
So I saw you actually... I think today you posted about your 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, 10-year anniversary today.
There you go. Congrats.
Even, that's beautiful.
Even more fitting of a story for that. So
yeah.
There's sorry to jump in here, but there's something to be said about like finding a person that you know, like, okay, I can like I know that I'm like worthy of myself and like I love myself, but this person is like this person's gonna help me hit the next iteration of me.
And you she know? Definitely did that.
Yeah.
I can imagine actually where I would be today if I didn't meet her. I'd probably be skateboarding around small town Quincy, Illinois, just doing odds and end jobs just to like barely get by. At that point in my life, like just I didn't really care how much money I made. Not that I really do now, but like I've learned that if I make more money, I can do cooler things.
Yeah.
Help more people. I can just, yeah, a lot comes with that. A lot of cool responsibilities come with just having more finances. But at the time, I just wanted to skate around town and just barely make ends meet and work out and hang out in the sun. And I'd probably still be there. And I'd probably be happy as could be. Life at that time was, I was like, oh man, life can't get any better than this.
Yeah.
But she's definitely really pushed me and, helped me just get more organized, be more disciplined. Dude, she was a pro. She she taught me how to be a pro.
Yeah.
That's really right what on. She did. And, we just got to learn about each other. We didn't know each other, dude, at all.
We're doing this.
We met each other and got married.
Yeah.
Wow. We figured it out from there.
That's awesome.
So it's been, it's been an interesting 10 years. We've spent pretty much every waking moment together. I mean, every business adventure we've ever had, we do together. We train together. We're just by each other nonstop. So those 10 years have kind of felt like 100. In a good way. And it's been a lot of fun just learning about each other and learning how to be in relationship together. And it's a lot, I'm sure it looks like.
And raise a kid.
Raise a kid.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a lot of work. But it's there's nothing that I can think of that brings me more joy than the thought of being in relationship with her and in addition parenting with her. So
dude,
she's an incredible teammate.
Absolutely.
Happy anniversary, Jay.
Yeah. Dude, what a story to go through on the anniversary. 10 years. Come on, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So when you guys like when you two committed to CrossFit together, was it kind of like, hey, let's go see if we're good at this, or were you already kind of in it? Or
really
how did it
just
work?
It was kind of a big focus on me. We were moving to Cincinnati, Ohio. At the time, that was kind of like the powerhouse like area.
So you knew like I'm gonna go for this. Like,
yeah, okay. I wanted to be a CrossFit Games champion.
Okay.
And it's funny that like those feelings have changed over the years. I went from wanting to be a CrossFit Games champion to like, man, I don't really care anymore. I just want to compete. To now I'm like back where I'm like, maybe I could try to go be a champion. We were going out there specifically for my training.
Okay.
And while we were out there, we were like, oh, whoa, she's really good at this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of put my individual like hopes and dreams and goals on hold to go do some more team oriented stuff in CrossFit. And it went well.
Yeah.
It went well. It took off rather fast for both of us. It went from, you know, I'd never really left small town Quincy, Illinois, and now all of a sudden I'm, you know, paying my bills by competing and traveling all over the world.
Yeah, how cool is that?
You know, by request too. Like people are like, hey, come over here and do CrossFit with us or teach us about it. And it's remarkable.
And you were somewhat early, kind of in the boom of CrossFit, right? I mean, that
good
was
good timing.
Yeah.
It was good timing. It's become significantly more professionalized. Uh-huh. And these dudes are very, very, very fit. Not that they like weren't back then, but back then you could be a pro athlete or a collegiate athlete, come in and be successful. It's not like that anymore.
Okay,
you can't just be a baller at something else and expect to just come over.
Like this has to be your discipline. Yeah,
You have to, it must be your full-time gig.
Yeah.
And you can, there are some very high level guys that are like, it is their full-time gig. And they're like, let's say there's this guy, Pat Vellner. He's a chiropractor.
Okay.
But I think he's only practicing chiropractic like once or twice a week. So, yeah. I mean, you pretty much have to be all day full on into training, eating, recovering, and
athlete. Yeah.
You won't make it. So, not to say that you can't, there's probably some freak show out there hopefully listening that wants to give it a shot.
Yeah.
I hope he or she takes it on and is able to prove me wrong, but it's the sport has changed significantly from when I first got in it. And I got in a very, very good time to where I was able to be rather green in regards to my skill and my fitness level. But because I had such a big foundation that came from football, and Jen had such a great foundation that came from soccer, we were able to thrive early on in the sport. And we just keep up
with the
curve of it.
Dude, hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, what's the landscape like now? Like, where are you? Right, because you said you had high interest being champ, low, now you're back. What does that mean?
A lot of just crazy things have happened. I have some wild stories, bro. So this would have been 2019, something like that. This is right before COVID. Jen and I are sitting down having a serious conversation about whether or not we want to have our own biological children.
Okay.
We had fostered, not because we like wanted to, but we saw a need. Someone was needed help.
Yeah.
And so we just like came in, swooped her up and took care of her for a year, a little longer. And, even though that we weren't like super passionate about doing that, we enjoyed the process of it. So we were like pretty cool with the idea of adopting a child in the future, if we even wanted one.
Sure.
So we had made the decision that we did not want to have our own biological children. We were comfortable with that. We decided like we got married because we love each other. It wasn't because we wanted to like have babies or anything. Not to say that's a bad reason to get married. I think that's, if you see someone and you like, you want to make babies with that person, I think that's a good box to check. But we had agreed that we weren't going to have our own biological children. And, the next day we find out we're pregnant. The very next day.
Yeah.
Now.
That's that vision, dude. Come
check this out. A year before this to the day, I had vision.
No way.
And in this vision, I had met my unborn child. I was introduced to my unborn disembodied child. I have to say it because no one told me it was a boy or a girl, but sure. They gave me the name and the birthday.
Wow.
I thought nothing of it, honestly. I really didn't. I was just like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
So these people introduced me to this disembodied child of mine. We got to like kind of embrace each other in a weird way. Like we got to kind of hug, even though we didn't have like bodies. And we kept saying to each other, like, we can't forget this. Like, this is so cool. We can't forget this. And yeah, they gave me her birthday and her name. Again, all I chalked that up to was just like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't think like, oh man, here we go. Kids on the way.
Sure.
Did not think it. A year goes by. All right. And honestly, even when we found out that we were pregnant, I still didn't even really, this didn't even really like really click. It wasn't until like they give us like the projected
birthday
yeah. And we're like, what is going on? Yeah, so that's an important part of the story because I didn't retire, but I stepped away from competing once I found out that she was pregnant. I wanted to, training eats up a lot of time. Yeah. You have to, like I said, you have to be all in. And I didn't want to be all in on training while, you know, this might be the only time that we ever have a kid.
You got to cherish that experience. Because the pregnancy is amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. It gives me chills. That was like one of my favorite parts. Just, it was so cool to witness that. And we just had so much fun, yeah, doing that. And we traveled a lot, and Jen was just glowing, and we had so much fun. She ended up being pregnant during COVID. Everything was shut down, so we own a van, and we just hit the road, and we went camping nice. The whole time.
Yeah.
And while she grew, you know, everyone's freaking out. So I'm like, let's get out of here and let's go grow a baby somewhere like super cool.
Yeah.
So we end up driving to like Sedona area, Arizona, and we camped out while COVID kind of blew over. And then came back home, had a baby, still stayed retired, if you will, for the first year. My daughter's name is Star, and so for the first year just wanted to be around, help out, do everything I could to just like take care of Jen while she took care of Star, because it's just, you're stuck like as a mother, you have this baby human attached to you, so I just wanted to be Jen's like hands and feet and help her out as much as I could with the hope and the plans of after that year, getting back into the sport. I didn't really anticipate after taking 2 years off and being kind of in like traditionally, once you start to get into your 30s, whether you're playing football or baseball or just whatever, it's just like, it's hard to keep up with these 20-year-old athletes fresh out of college. So in my mind, I didn't think that I had a ton left to give to the sport, and they have a master's division, so you get separated into age groups. So it makes it just really at the end of the day easier to compete at a high level, because you don't have to go up against teenagers or 20-year-olds. You can go up against people your age, still very, very fit dudes. And so I decided I was going to go into the master's division, just because I didn't think I would be able to be as fit as I needed to be to compete against the kids anymore.
Sure.
And kind of surprised myself, end up getting in great shape. Good enough shape where I was like really bummed that I wasn't in the kid division. But still just following through with it, I was like, this is an awesome opportunity for me to go win a gold medal and, you know, be the fittest 35-year-old in the world.
Yeah.
And couple days before my bicep exploded.
I want to ask you about this. I saw this on your social.
Sucked, dude. Holy shit. I've never had an injury, like a real injury that needed like medical intervention. All the injuries I've ever had in my life, you know, you just
bounce
take
back,
a couple weeks off, you know, brush it off, tape it up, whatever. This one, you know, my arm stopped working. I couldn't pick up my coffee.
What were you doing?
I jumped up to hang from a pull-up bar.
That's it.
Is it all the crazy things I do, dude?
Yeah. Exactly.
I can pick up 700 pounds. I can like, I can do muscle ups, like as many as you want me to. And I can strap 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds to my waist and do pull-ups with it, but yeah. Just jumped up and went to hang and it just popped. And I knew in the moment, I was like, dang, that's, you know.
That means it detached, right?
It detached, yeah. Okay.
And then it slides up or something? Is that what happens?
So mine, it had this little tiny thread left that kind of kept it down. So because of that, it got misdiagnosed a couple times by some really great doctors too. So I was told it was just a pretty bad sprain, and that it would just be up to me and my pain tolerance as to what I wanted to do competitively.
Okay.
I'm like, you guys, I can't, I can't
like
pick up.
Mother.
It really wasn't even like a pain issue.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like,
it didn't
I
work.
Couldn't even pick my arm up. Yeah. It wouldn't, I like tell it to come up and it like wouldn't do it. And I'm getting body work on it. I got freaking Tom Brady's like body workers working on the best in the business. And it's just, it's killing me having these guys working on it. But I knew the second it happened that like it was pretty well over. But I was going to keep a competitive mindset until they were like, I withdrew or I was withdrawn.
Yeah.
And, but I knew the goals of winning, you know, a gold were completely shot. You know, even you have to be at like 100%. If you're at even like 95%, it's not going to do it. And I was at like 60%. First event comes out and it has like rope climbs in it and there's no chance. So
yeah. Shit.
I had to withdraw. And that, you know, from that moment just kind of, and I was still pretty fired up about competing. So I was like excited for the next season. And I just wanted to get my arm better. And so I'm waiting and it's just like, I'm not getting better. And I'm like talking to my wife and I'm like, dude, I have to go get it looked at again. This would be at this point in time, my third, like opinion on it.
Okay.
All right. And a good amount of time's gone by, like almost 4 weeks. Which is about kind of the cutoff for operating on a ruptured tendon.
Cause it starts healing.
Yep. They start to get a little, the tendon gets diseased and it just start, the blood supply leaves and it just kind of, withers up and goes away. But it was misdiagnosed because there's this tiny little thread of tendon still attached that kept my bicep down my bicep just size, it looked all so good and like so meaty and big to them that they just
hanging on by a thread
and went and got imagery done and the doctor said I like you need to get surgery today.
Shit.
And he hooked it up, dude. He got me in the very next day, did a wonderful job, and
and that was it.
I'm back. I'm still like working on getting like full go in this particular area, but like the rest is, you know, firing all cylinders right now.
Dude.
So
that's just, it's crazy that it's the simplest thing like that. Like, do you think it was partially torn from something else before, dude, and that just set it off or what?
I wrestled with it for so long.
Yeah, I just
like,
can't even.
What could I have done different? How did this happen? Yeah. Why did this happen? And the only thing that I can really think of, I don't know that it was damaged. I really don't think it was. Uh-huh. I think I would have felt something or felt like I'm pretty in tune with my body.
Yeah.
My only thought that I have about it is I think I was dehydrated.
Okay.
And at the time was training outdoors at elevation. You know, your respiratory rate's a little bit higher, yeah. So you're expelling, you know, more water. The demands for for water and electrolytes are a little higher, and I don't know that I was, you know, meeting those to the best of my ability. Now, like, still was probably like, I carry a water vessel around me everywhere. Like, I'm neurotic about drinking water even before the injury. So like, it's not like I wasn't doing a great job. I just think it just a little bit of dehydration, and just the timing and everything. It just, the way I jumped up with this, and I rarely do this, which is weird. I jumped up with a supinated grip. And I rarely ever do that. And it just, I think the angle and the dehydration and the timing of the day and all that stuff, just
bunch of factors.
Yeah.
Perfect storm, really.
Yep. Just a big old guy too. Like, that's still a lot, you know, a lot to ask of your bicep tendon, even when it's healthy.
Right.
It just popped off.
So recovery now and going full on.
Yeah.
When's the season kick off again?
Season's kicked off already. I'm qualified for the games. There'll be 9 other athletes. So there's a couple stages. There's the open division or open competition. That's a worldwide competition. Everyone participates in that. And then from that, they take the top 30. And then from the top 30, they take it down to the top 10. And then, so I'll be one of those 10 athletes that'll go to the CrossFit Games to compete for the fittest masters athlete. And okay. Then,
and this is no age. This is
this is age. Oh, this is age okay. group. And then next year, I plan on going back into the no
okay. you know,
the no age
nice
division, which I'm really excited. Surprisingly, I'm the fittest I've ever been, which is really cool. I'm 36 years old, and I didn't expect that. You know, I kind of like mapped it out in my mind to where, like, okay, you know, when you get to be about this age, you're gonna have to start, you're gonna start slowing down, and I'm not, and it's not because of an attitude or a belief or anything. Like, I'm not trying to like put my body through hell just to be able to do this. It's just, I'm finding it out I'm finding it out right now. Like,
getting better. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I can still do this.
Would you say that those kind of like arbitrary standards of when you get to this point, you're kind of over the hill. Do you think that that's based off of like old data?
I don't even know that it's data necessarily. Yeah, like it's lack just of like data, really. You get it in all areas of your life. Wait till you're 30, wait till you're 40, wait till you're 50.
Yeah.
You know, hey, when are you going to get a job? When are you going to get married? When are you going to have kids? There's just this, like, these ideas that, you know, are just part of our culture, if you will, that, like, and I think it's, you know, it, I guess data wise, it the majority of people, you know, probably when they hit their 30s, these things happen. The majority of people when they turn 40, these things happen. But I don't think that's like a, and I'm living proof of that to, you know, that's these things are not just because they're common or normal doesn't mean that they're right or you know, the, you know, what's possible or anything like that. So I mean,
just even like, so like all athleticism aside, like your average person, especially in America, is like pretty sedentary. Or actually no, your average American is pretty sedentary. And then by the time they get to their mid 30s, it's already almost 20 years of no activity.
Yeah.
So of course you're falling apart already.
I don't blame them, dude. Having a kid, cause if we follow the standard, the cultural standard of like, all right, you get a job and then you get married and then you have a kid, like those things, if you're not careful, can definitely like chew you up and spit you out for sure. Like if you're working a 9-to-5 and you're at a desk, like that's a, you know, pretty sedentary there. And then you have a kid, you're pretty locked down. And then you're like, you know, I'm a pretty health conscious guy, eat really clean, but there's times you're like, I will feed you anything that I just need you to eat, kid. Mm-hmm. Just eat. I don't care what it is. And then you end up eating some of that crap. Yeah. Like it's an easy one to fall into for sure. So I don't like blame anyone or like wag my finger at anyone because like, you know, you gained 40 pounds after you had a bunch of kids or you had to start working or something. It's a tough.
Well, there, I'll push back on that a little bit. I think there's a point. You have to make a decision yourself when you have the kid of like, am I going to let this whoop my ass or am I going to own this?
I just don't think people know it's really whooping their ass one day they just like I have a homie who, he got up to like 500 pounds after college. Yeah. You know, he was, and it just like, it's just kind of like a thing where you're like one day you're like, dude. Sure.
Yeah.
What happened to me?
Yeah.
And it was more like he'd just hear some friends of his would just comment something that would just get him thinking like, oh my gosh, I am morbidly obese.
Yeah.
And you just like, you know, your spirit really, I think, is what can kind of keep you from really recognizing what's going on physically. Cause you're still stoked. Yeah. You're still living life. You're getting out there. And he was too. Big old 500 pound boy. He played football, savage at football. And then, you know, super athletic, super fit, puts on a ton of weight, still athletic, still fit. He's still getting it, going out and hiking, you know, still just getting out there.
Sure.
And you don't even really recognize it because of the spirit. And but yeah, I agree with you as well, man. There's definitely you gotta kind of there's some decision making that needs to happen, and if you make those decisions, it doesn't have to be such a grind, and it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to chew you up and spit you out. Like you can definitely fight back for sure.
Totally. Dude, I got to give you props for, you know, really, I can't remember what podcast it was on. I was listening to a podcast, but you really kind of opened up about, you know, how you eat, like what he's talking about with excuses, but you talked about it how like, yeah, I worked so hard and I deserve a cookie, or like, yeah, I'm super sore, I should smoke this joint or whatever. And like, those are the tiny, those little things that, you know, 100 calories here, not a big deal, but you do that, you know, 50 times, the accumulation of that could be what, you know, maybe held you back from the gold or the next level or whatever. And I think it's really important for guys like you to like talk about still struggling like with that maybe mental decision or talk about you going through it, because people could look at you and be like, look at this guy, he's so disciplined, he said he's got it all dialed, he never probably has to battle with that. We're like, I think most of our society on like a big scale gives into too much to that too much. And that's why the obesity is such a problem. That's why all those things are a problem. So, you know, you talking about like your battles with yourself like that is freaking huge and awesome, dude.
I'm glad you point that out. I already mentioned my friend who's, you know, he was 500 pounds overweight, and he struggles with like his body image. Well, it's gotten much better, but he's got a lot of loose skin, and he's lost over 200 pounds.
Damn, hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's doing great. But it's funny, like when he looks in the mirror, he sees himself as the 500 pound fat guy.
Yeah.
And it's just, he can't shake it. And I'm really not much different. I really am not. I know that I look ripped right now and I'm shredded.
Yeah.
But it's still a lingering aspect of, I think, everyone's life to kind of be up against these must just be something in our psyche, dude.
Yeah.
I deal with it all the time. I deal with it when I'll kind of talk about it actually. I'm sure this has been written about and talking about in some like Jungian psychology book or something like that, but I'm not super familiar with it. So I don't know how it's been labeled and talked about, but it comes up regularly, whether it be, you know, we're talking about smoking that joint or eating that cookie, or maybe I get it when I'm training a lot, letting up on my pace or something like that, because it's hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll even look down at my watch and my heart rate's fine. I'm not dying or anything like that. It's just like, you just kind of don't want to do it and you don't want to push yourself like that. But it seems like to me that we all have this kind of inner, excuse my language, but like this inner bitch, this kind of,
wants you to lose.
It's pessimistic. it's fearful. It has excuses. But
it's super clever.
And it's there for a reason too. I don't want to call, you know, this part of your psyche, it's not like bad, I don't think, but it can be. Yeah. And so can the other one. The other one's just like super tough, like you can do it, you don't need that cookie. You could go walk to work today or whatever it is. And then you have yourself just like kind of observing this, this fight between the two. At the end of the day, it comes down to, it seems like you will, if you're not really paying attention, you'll default to the latter.
Yeah.
And
bitch voice.
Yep.
Yeah.
That seems to be, and I think to keep us probably alive.
Right.
It seems like a pretty normal, that makes sense to me that would be the,
because it used to be there's a giant bear over there.
Don't go by bear. Yeah. Stay away from bear. Stay in cave. Yeah. Do not leave cave. I think it's there for good reason, but it definitely can get us into some trouble too. But man, it's wild, especially like when I'm out running, man, and I'm just like watching these two like duke it out. But I'm at the seat and, I'm like the judge and I get to like make the rule on who's going to kind of, you know, win the fight, you know, and there's a friend of mine, it's super corny, but my friend has this it's just a piece of artwork up in their house and it talks about these two wolves. I'm sure you guys have heard some variation of these stories, or the two dogs or whatever, but these two wolves, one's, you know, the white wolf and the dark wolf, and the dark wolf is all this anger and resentment and this, and just whatever you want to, you know, it's kind of the bitch dog.
Yeah.
And then there's this, you know, tough white, alpha dog. And, it's this old like Indian chief talking about, you know, these two wolves to this young boy. And, you know, at the end of it, after explaining the differences between the two dogs in this fight, you know, they're in a fight. The boy asks, which one wins, you know, grandpa? And he says, whichever one you feed. And like same thing with the stuff going on upstairs, you know, it's, you know, I reference like I'm the judge or I'm the person at the seat and I get to make the decision, but yeah, it's, you can kind of, you can pick, and it's maybe I've cultivated a little more discipline over the years in regards to being able to kind of be conscious of what I'm deciding, but I still struggle with it.
Sure.
I believe that we all do. Yeah. I think it's a natural part of all of our psyches, that, you know, you have the two wolves, or you have, you know, the whatever we want to call it,
whatever,
that we all have that, and we all struggle with it, and it gets in our head and it lives in our head, and it has a good amount of real estate in there, and it's not going anywhere, and we all struggle with it. There's no one that is exempt from that, but even, you know, myself, you see a guy with a six pack and veins in his legs and his arms, and you're like, oh, that guy doesn't struggle with, you know, with anything in regards to being disciplined enough to say no to the cookie. Yeah. Like, or again, I love the joint reference. There's lots and lots of times I come home and I'm just like, dude, I'm so tired. I am sore. And I'm like, I kind of struggled with, I wouldn't call myself an addict, but just with football culture, mm-hmm. you get fed a lot of pills, dude.
Yeah.
It's just like, take this.
I'm sure in college that was like crazy.
Dude,
huh?
It's nuts. And I didn't really realize how much damage I was doing to myself by doing that. So I've been pretty adamant about just staying away from pharmaceuticals in general. But there's times I come home and I want them, and I like my body hurts, or not, or I just want to, like, I want to go right to sleep. And just smoking a J would be a really, it would be the easy button for sure. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, love smoking a J. Probably going to smoke a J tonight with my wife. There's a time and just like cookies. I love cookies, dude. Like, there's a time and a place for cookies. Every Saturday, I go get a cookie. All right. And, or like, if I'm at a birthday party, you better believe I'm going to eat a piece of cake.
Yeah.
But you don't need to be having cookies every single night. Day. You don't need to have cake every single night. You don't need to be smoking J's all day.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you feel this or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, we all struggle with it, dude. And just over the years, I've maybe become a little bit more disciplined with it, but it doesn't mean that I don't struggle with it anymore. Yeah. It's still something that I would imagine I'll be up against for the rest of my life, as all of you.
Yeah.
And, I hope that anyone listening can just, you just have to start paying attention to it. If you let yourself run on autopilot, you're going to naturally, I think you're going to go for the cookie and you're going to do the easy button. And you're going to stay in the cave and, stay away from the bear. So like, I don't fault anyone for that. I think it's just a natural part of our makeup. And, but you can, through repetition and training and practice and just being a little bit more conscious of your decision making and your and such, that you can fight it.
Yeah,
you can feed feed it.
Stack the wins to where when you want to go and have the cookie, it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, sure, you can have an Oreo, but when you have a whole column of Oreos, like you're doing some pretty huge damage to the body, man.
Yeah,
and speaking from firsthand experience. Like I was a recon Marine, right? So like, you have to be ridiculously fit, and like there are guys there that they could have been Olympic athletes, mm-hmm. and they decided to join the military.
Some of the fittest dudes I know.
Yes.
We always kind of say, there's a couple types of fitness. Uh-huh. There's like the fitness I do, mm-hmm. which is just competitive fitness. Mm-hmm. There's fitness where you punch people in the face.
Yeah, fighting.
And then there's fitness where you shoot people in the face. And I would agree. There's actually a good friend of mine, Navy SEAL. He's out here right now visiting. He's one of the fittest dudes I've ever met in my life. And
you're around the top.
And you'll no one will ever know about this guy just because he's busy like suiting up, and like we're sending him off.
Yeah.
And I know some guys who fight too. It's like, dog, if you made this, you don't have to get punched in the face anymore if you don't want to, dude.
Yeah.
You could still do the fitness stuff and come over to my side. I'm not interested in getting shot at and getting punched in the face. So man, it's something that's always perplexed me.
So when you're talking about your friend that had like that massive weight gain, like I've never been anywhere near that big, right? But I've dealt with post-traumatic stress and like some pretty serious head injuries. And those are actually very commonly intertwined.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like falling way out of shape, dude, after the mill, and gaining 50 pounds, like just being terrible. But in my mind, I had this identity of, well, no, I was a recondo. Like I could do crazy stuff with my body, but then like the mirror didn't say that. The mirror said otherwise. Right.
Yeah.
And like I fluctuated over the years, and I tried like bodybuilding. I tried powerlifting. I only dabbled in CrossFit a little bit in the military. Like I never actually, I did like one Murph like years ago, but I've never actually tried CrossFit, but it just nothing ever really clicked for me. And then I just got into this mode of like pessimistic, like whatever, dude, I'm broken and I don't want to train anymore. Like, and then only like in the last, I would say, I think yesterday was like my 168th day of just like training every day. And like getting back on it, dude. And but one thing that I can look back of like my like when I gained a lot of weight and just got really terrible shape was that like, oh, it's just this one mentality. It's like it's just this one cookie, it's just this one beer, it's just this one burger, yeah. right? But then you have 2 months, 3 months, or 365 days of just this ones,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you're neglecting the fact that. Yeah, you just had this one yesterday too, though.
Yeah.
And you just had this one the day before that. And then you start building this pattern where now you're like 500, 600, 700, maybe even 1200 calories surplus.
Yeah.
And
it's not a good look.
No, man, not at all. And so that's been part of me getting back into shape is like just reprogramming like my identity of, so like I was telling him yesterday, so I'm the warehouse manager. So I obviously manage like sending out all the product. I also manage all the purchasing and like planning our kind of production budget and stuff.
Thank you for your service there.
Yeah, dude. Thankfully, I actually really love like the playing with the spreadsheets and the data. It's like I grew up playing Tetris as a kid. So yeah. To me, it's like spreadsheets, like Tetris, just dropping all the numbers in the right place. Uh-huh. And so
it's
I need
got some good spreadsheets.
Yeah, dude, I love. Don't fuck with my spreadsheets, man. Like I take that stuff very seriously, dude. And that's why, like, I'll share my sheets and I don't allow any editing.
Oh my god.
Okay, so I update them twice a month. So obviously it's the beginning of the month, so they're due again. And yesterday I was gonna go to this brewery that's like right next to my house. I'm like, hey, get a beer, work on my sheets. It's all good. And lately I've been developing like this mantra where to battle like temptation. So like instead of in the back of my head, like knowing I shouldn't be doing this, but like sometimes you feed that dog, right? I literally say it out loud. Like you don't overeat.
No.
Yeah. So like yesterday I was packing my backpack with my stuff to go work at the brewery. And I was like, you're not a guy that drinks too much. Like you're not a guy that needs to drink right now. Yeah. And I literally like put my bag down and I didn't do it.
That's tight,
and,
dude.
And it's been part of like just literally like my identity, like me telling myself, this is who you are. And this is who you're not.
That's mm-hmm. awesome work, dude. And just like, and not to like, come in with excuses for you. Mm-hmm. I think what you've done is incredible. But I've had a significant amount of head injuries. Mm-hmm. And just like any injury to any body part, like if I injure my bicep, strain it, sprint, whatever, tear it, or even just like, I work it too much and it's just tired and fatigued, it's not going to behave the way, that it could or it should. And same thing with our noggin, dude. Whether it's from like percussion or actually like getting, it stresses out your brain, and it like your brain's not going to behave the way that it should. And so like in comes, behaviors that are abnormal to your, like what you're used to, thoughts and just like, and it just, it's a difficult injury to deal with because it's not as tangible. A lot of other injuries, you can see the bruising, you can, it hurts to wear, bear weight on it or something like that. When it comes to like head injuries and brain injuries, like you don't really like feel it. There's definitely symptoms that are very clear, but sometimes when you're injured in your head like that, it can be just really difficult to kind of sort some of that stuff out. So just like mad props to you, dude, for like just kind of chugging along through that one. That's not an easy one to get over. And that's probably honestly a big reason why you were struck. Like it's the mainframe, bro. Like it's calling a lot of shots, for this, like your nervous system and your body. And if it's all swollen and beat up, like things just aren't going to be functioning well. So I struggled even too hormonally, at like the peak of my like concussion career. You know, definitely had some really weird weight fluctuations and behavioral, you know, type things, lots of difficulty focusing and getting diagnosed as, you know, this and this and this and this, when really I just needed, like, I needed to give my head a break. And like, and just like any injury, I have to explain this to a lot of people too. I was talking to a girl yesterday just about, some essentially trauma that she experienced, and maybe hasn't recognized from a relationship that ended rather, uncomfortably, to say it, I guess, kind of passively. And when I did my bicep, dude, the doctor said it was going to take a good year to get, like, to be back. And he's like, the scar, it'll get better, like, but it's going to take a year for all that to, like, for the scar to almost, like, not look like it's there, for your bicep to be good. Very tangible thing. And you can see it. You see the healing taking place. But when it comes to brain injuries or even emotional, like being injured emotionally, you can't touch them. You can't feel them. And so they're so easy to just, like, skip over, and people don't give themselves enough grace in that regard, and in regards to the timing that it takes to heal from some of those things. So whether it be a traumatic brain injury or a traumatic relationship, it takes a lot of time to recover from those things, especially, naturally. You know, I had medical intervention, and without it, I would have never healed.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, definitely, just again, mad props to you, dude, for, like, because I guess maybe too, because I've kind of been there, not in the same capacity you have as a warrior, but just I've dealt with, you know, the symptoms that come from, you know, those types of injuries, and it's definitely a tough one to kind of get out of. So just nice work, dog.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. And what's interesting about treating post-traumatic stress linked to combat is, unlike other forms of trauma, like I firmly subscribe to the fact that trauma doesn't have it, like, a face.
Yeah, trauma's trauma.
Trauma is trauma, dude.
Yeah.
Like, your brain, like, even people think, like even with your eyes don't see everything, but your eyes relay as much information as possible to your brain. But you are your brain.
Yeah.
Everything else is an organ, an extremity, or some type of thing that we've developed to, like, to function. Yeah. Right.
I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about the difference between, say, your combat traumas versus, say,
like, sexual trauma.
Yeah. Or yeah. Yeah. We'll just say combat trauma versus, you know, any other trauma.
Sure.
Because I have some thoughts on in regards to,
okay,
you know, what makes trauma so difficult to shake.
Sure. So for those listening, you know, you are your brain, and all your organs, all your sensory organs are relaying information to your brain, but ultimately it's always an interpretation of what's happening around you. It's your body's best interpretation of what's happening, right? And so, you know, we might all see this, you know, that sign, but we may not all see the same shade of blue on that sign, right? So when something's happening that's traumatic, I don't believe that, like, this person's trauma is more serious or, you know, whatever than the next person's, because your brain is just, all your brain knows is something bad's happening, mm-hmm. right? And so what's being digested by all your sensory organs and being relayed, it just comes out the feed, you know, like the old school, like, it just says trauma on it.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think that anyone, there's no, like, accolade or tier system or hierarchy of traumas.
Yeah.
Like, something bad happened to you and you need help.
Yeah.
Right. And some people, maybe they need more help than others, but I don't think that there's one person's experience that's more serious than the other. So when it comes to treating combat trauma, it's exceptionally difficult because unlike sexual trauma or let's say like a car crash or a fire or something, not all combat experience is negative versus, for example, someone that's been like raped, for example, there's basically nothing positive you can take from that situation. Whereas in combat, there is, as speaking from firsthand experience, there is like a certain primal nature of like, obviously killing is bad. Even if you kill a bad person, that person was bad, but life is precious. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that that life was tethered to a shitty person, right? But one thing I can definitely tell you from going to war is everyone always thinks they're the good guy. Mm. Both sides think they're the good guy, right? So it's then that becomes like subjective of like who was good and who was bad, right?
Yeah. Like what's your justification for good? Like
And some people have a very, very wacky definition of good.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, that's just what that guy believed, and I'm over here with what I believed, right? And so dealing with post-traumatic stress linked to combat is difficult because you can't just throw the blanket over and say, hey, it was all bad, and so therefore these are the modalities we're going to take to get you back to the good. It's like you have to teach people to divorce the separate the bad from the good. And it's hard to get some veterans to be open to therapy because in their mind, it's like, well, I don't want to let all of it go. It's like, right, I'm just going to help you let go of the negative aspects.
Ooh.
But that very act of combat brought the negative.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
It's similar in nature. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar in nature to the concept of there's obviously a myriad of addictions that human beings can have, but addiction to food is exceptionally difficult to treat because you have to eat.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like if someone's a gambler, you know, obviously you should never tell an addict just stop cold turkey, but essentially gambling is not necessary to survive.
Yeah.
Whereas you still have to eat, dude. So if you have if you have trouble overeating or undereating, you still have to do the thing that is your problem every day. So with combat, it's like I never want to forget those experiences. The difficulty then became learning how to separate the positive aspects with the negative.
That's thank you for sharing that. By the way, that was really cool to hear. I've been fascinated by stuff like this for a while. Because as we all probably do, and you know, and to some varying degrees, whether it was you know, getting shot at, and you know, and interesting, you pointed out too that like not all bad, but they're linked together in the memory, and that seems to be the most difficult part of any trauma is the memory of it. You know, for me, it was like getting my ass kicked in high school and stuff and being bullied. And and those memories are there. I can forgive those people and I can relinquish like all the feelings I have toward all that. And I have, and it feels good, but the memories still exist and you can't do shit about getting rid of those, buddy. But what you can do, and I love that you're kind of pointing those out, is the separation of those. And then also, I guess what comes after that is the tools, the coping mechanisms then in regards to, your capability to understand and recognize that I am now behaving and acting in a way that isn't, you know, I don't want to be, because I'm, you know, I'm like reliving this, you know, this memory. And it just, for some people, and I was one of those people too, unconsciously, it would just trigger me into, just behaving poorly, to kind of say it in a roundabout way. So it's really neat to hear you share your story and talk about how, you know, combat trauma is different, because I never even thought of it like that. That there's, you know, there's good memories that you have in there, but they're linked to the bad memories too. So that's tight, dude. Have you, since then, gotten better at managing your ability to notice when those bad memories are triggering a certain behavior that isn't ideal in certain situations, and being able to like circumvent and navigate that in a graceful manner.
I've definitely gotten a lot better over the years. I would say my absolute rock bottom was probably like 5 or 6 years ago. Just like straight up suicidal ideations, like all bad, dude. Every day was like, I just got to get to through, like, I, once I go to bed, I know, okay, I made it one more day. Mm. And I've slowly, you know, it's been like the roller coaster, but the overall trend line has been up.
Yeah.
And then I really struggled hard at the beginning of this year, and how I know I'm still on the right track is, even though I really struggled at the beginning of this year, I'm getting better at identifying when it's happening.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so like I actually got back on my fitness toward like around fall of last year, and I was doing really good, dude. I was like cycling every day, you know, weightlifting, stuff like that. And then I just took a nosedive, like fell off. And then around the beginning of the year, it was like, fuck it, dude. I don't even want to do this. Like, I don't even want to do life anymore.
Isn't it wild how
quickly,
like I tripped
so quick
and fell into depression. And then I
realized like, this is bad. Something is really wrong. And, so then I just kind of like had, I took the time before, like I decided like, I'm not even going to work out again yet. I just need to figure out like what is happening. And like, I don't like being result oriented. I want to be process oriented. So like, I don't want to scrape out one individual win at a time. I want to set up my life so that winning is like my, where I'm normal. Like winning is the norm, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean winning as in like having good days over bad. And so then I just realized, okay, like what are my negative influences? What's triggering like my intrusive thoughts and like giving me, what's the kink in the hose, right? Mm-hmm. Like what's going on here? And I've been like slowly, you know, ironing out those things, and I'm doing like much better now. But there's like you said, like you never get rid of the memories. It's more like learning how to deal with the memories and process how they make you feel.
Yeah.
There's stuff like I won't tell on camera, but like there's things that from like my experiences, like sometimes even brushing my teeth is hard from an experience I had.
Yeah.
And, but it's like, I'm sitting there like brushing my teeth, and then like I stop with the fucking toothbrush in my mouth. Like, oh, like it's like fucks with my head. I'll tell you guys about it after.
Yeah. No, I get it. I live over on Coronado, and I got a lot of friends that, are Navy SEALs, and, and dude, just hearing what they're up against with some memories is like, these are all, from what I've gathered too, just all, from you, just awesome human beings that got their stuff together, and like their identity is not wrapped up in these memories, and, but there's the memory just still haunts them. Mm-hmm. And it just, and the littlest thing can like just wig them out, dude. And I've seen it on multiple occasions, like, just be having a great time, and then like, you know, one of the baddest dudes on the planet just in tears, and I'm like, what's up? Yeah. Like, what's going on, dude? Yeah. We're just playing volleyball right now. what's going on? But it doesn't take much. Just like you said, it could be brushing your damn teeth, and you're all of a sudden that's your kink, and that's where you trip, and how easily it is to just to fall in to depression. And I'm actually like just getting out of one, from like a couple weeks ago. Silly stuff too. So silly. And more marital, relational. And we're good. Like we love each other to death. We've been married for 10 years. We're having a blast, you know, just had a kid, yada, yada, all things going good. And still like every once in a while, and just be, and it's so stupid. It's so stupid, but it like it trips you up. And like, again, no one is immune to it, but we can get better at like recognizing things that do trigger it. And when it does get triggered, and recognizing that it is, mm-hmm. and not just going like autopilot, you know, sad psycho, which I still, I still struggle with. It takes me sometimes weeks to go from like on top of a mountain, happy as can be, to just like tumbling down in an instant. And then just like, and it was nothing that tripped me up. No, like you said, brushing your teeth, bro.
Yeah.
Like, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. But, and the same thing for me, it'll be nothing. For us, it was my daughter like scraped her hand up. Mm-hmm. And she's fine. She's good. She doesn't need any, no medical intervention. She is fine. Some Band-Aids will do. And just, it caused just this quick little trip for Jen and I. And it led to me just to take, it's almost, it's coming up on 2 weeks. I'm like just getting out of it. Mm-hmm. So like, I think this is super tight that we're, I don't know how your podcasts normally go.
Oh no, it's open but, for everything.
Dude. But this there's is, no thing. It's, we go this anywhere. Is a great yeah. like discussion that is applicable to every human being. Like not, yeah. maybe not all dudes know what it's like to have long hair, sure. but like we can all, this is something that like we can all like vibe with. And like this truly will, affects every single human being, guy and girl. And I think it's just super tight to hear you open up about it and to share and just talk about things that you've done to treat yourself.
Yeah.
So I always tell people like, dude, if that mindset of like, well, my problems are smaller, it's like, you know what that means? They're easier to fix. So if you're the kind of person that thinks like, well, I haven't been in combat or I haven't been, you know, assaulted or whatever, it's like, okay, but if it can't be both. It can't be my problems are smaller and they're harder to fix. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, even if it's just a little something wrong, then take a little bit of time and sort yourself out and stay healthy,
yeah,
physically and mentally, right? And especially like guys with long hair, like this takes effort to keep this up, right? It's you have to make conscious decisions. It's not just, well, let me just that magic potion to wash my ass and I'll wash my head with it too, right? It's like, no,
I did that for too long.
Yeah. So tying that analogy into mental health care, it's like, hey man, make a conscious decision. You don't have to go see a therapist or go get, you know, sound therapy or whatever the modality. It's like, maybe you just need to go take a brisk walk.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I'm going to call my friend, that guy I know I can tell him about stuff, right? Or go talk to your dad or your mom or talk to your wife or your husband or your partner. They love you probably more than anyone in the world. So why wouldn't they want to sit there and hear you out, right?
And yeah, they can't be harbored.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can't just hold it in forever, dude. I know people like that.
Yeah. I don't care how tough you are.
Yeah.
Like
that's going to eat
break
you up inside.
You off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good example of that I've seen in my life is my dad. He's had some trauma just in his family, and his dad died really young, and he's never dealt with it. Mm-hmm. He's never dealt with it. And it's affected me and my sister and our relationship with him and really the relationship with his sisters. And it's just like, you know, I've tried to talk to him about it. I tried a lot of things, but he's just like, he's so deep that I don't know how I pull him out.
Dude, I mean, it feels sometimes impossible to get pulled out even when you're in it for like a couple days.
Right.
So I can't imagine, you know.
Oh yeah, this is years
the depth of that and the difficulty of getting out of that. And I think there's hope. I really do. I've got to witness it and, you know, and hear awesome stories like that in regards to like being able to come out of that. Mm-hmm. So it's just hang in there, you know, keep loving on him, man. And just keep being there so that, you know, hopefully if there comes a day that they're ready to open up, then you're ready to listen. And I think that'll be incredibly therapeutic for them. But gosh, dude, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, man. Get help sooner than later. Yeah. And like, 'cause the longer you wait, the harder it is going to be to get yourself out of that, man. That mood just becomes an attitude, and that attitude just becomes your belief, and you just end up embodying it. Mm-hmm. And then you're walking around with it. And it's tough to shake, man, when it becomes like that integrated into your being.
Totally. Mm. I mean, I think it changes like the way you talk, the way you look, like even though your face, you like said, how you just look.
It's an embodiment.
It becomes a filter that you see everything through. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the rose tinted glasses concept.
Yeah.
But like, it's like now the rest of your life is going to be processed through these eyes, this version of you that's angry.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm pretty sure there was a study. I don't know. I hate saying this because I'm not going to be able to cite the source.
Well, yeah. I read an article.
Yeah. Sure. No, but there was, I remember reading about a study that was focused on people that just are like generally negative about everything. And it becomes almost like you like develop like neural pathways where like now anytime you process any new information, it's automatically filtered through that negative neural pathway that you have, where like someone just comes into your lane and you all of a sudden like you're so wound so tight and like you're so upset about life that some menial like, oh, this guy didn't signal coming into my lane in traffic, and it's like boom, you're blast off already. And it's like, dude, I mean, come on, man, that's like the smallest problem you could have had today. Yeah, right,
you could tell a lot about people's what people got going on when they're in a vehicle.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, okay, whoa. That guy just
all right, dude. Hey, you know, you can have it
off and you're losing it right now.
Yeah. Okay. Dude, I think like to your point about, you know, addressing it as soon as you can, it's almost like it's soft, and as time goes on, it starts getting harder and harder and heavier and more like a fucking tumor in you or something. And like, it's just going to be harder and harder and harder.
Get in there while it's soft and easy to work with, dude. Exactly. Even though like it's fresh, and that's probably why people want to avoid it. It's just so fresh and it hurts. But there's no better time to work with it when it's soft. And gosh, Dan, getting there before, you know, thanks for sharing your scholarly article with us. But obviously, it sounds like it is hardening up, literally forming neural pathways that are like, they're there. Mm-hmm. And it just, like we've been talking about, becomes full on embodiment and belief in the way that you see and perceive everything.
Which leads to other problems, right? Like instead of therapy or something, I'm just boozing. Mm. And like, that's what I see with my dad, you know, it's just like, I can't even remember the last time I've hung out where he has not drank.
Dang, dude.
You know, and it fucking sucks. I got three kids and I thought, you know, when I had kids, maybe it would snap him out or get him fired up and stuff. And it's like, even the times I see him smile, it's like he's struggling. Like it's a battle, you know, like it's the happiness is just never there. And I don't know. I mean, it obviously affects me as a son, but it also is like I don't know what else to do. Like at some point you as a man yourself, you got to like, take this upon yourself. The last thing I think I could do, which I haven't done yet, is I think I need to do now that I've had my kids and I see my son and stuff, is like I need to take him on a trip, like just him and I go out hunting or something, like get out in the outdoors where we can't go to a bar, where there is no beer that he can go get, where there's none, like we're miles out, and like be there for a few days. And I think that's like my last
thing. Probably won't be pretty, but like sounds like it's a good move to like to get some sort of movement. And I'm not a professional.
At least get a kink in that, so, that thing we're talking about, that hard, firm rock in there. At least chip a little piece off, you know?
Well, maybe, good luck to you, dude. I hope you follow through on something like that. That sounds like a
I'm gonna do it. It's been on my mind for since the beginning of this year, but I need to do it, you know, for the end of this year.
Yeah. Share the podcast with them.
Well, I mean, I do share my stuff. I don't think he checks it out. But.
The conversations that I have internally and like how I try to check my mental health is, it's really easy to be the protector, like the badass. Like, well, you know, if someone comes in this house, like, you know, I'm gonna show him, right? And it's like, but the being the strong muscle guy is like the easy part, right? But like being vulnerable is the hard part. Right. And
opening up.
Yeah. And so this is something I said on the main cave. I said, you know, sure, you can protect your family physically, but like, how safe do they feel emotionally, mentally? Right. Do they feel love? Do they feel protected emotionally? Do they feel like, how much joy do you bring? Because if you're the Mr. Protector, but they're fucking miserable around you, you're doing irreparable damage.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe if like, you know, like, okay, your kid scraped their hand and that's going to heal, right? Especially children are like, like invincible practically. Like they can take some nasty falls that I don't think I would come back from, right? But if you're the kind of guy that your kids are always on edge, they don't feel safe around you, or they feel tense, or, you know, you're just you're the tyrant essentially in the household. You're failing one of the most important aspects of being a man, which is not just physical protection, but emotional and intellectual protection as well. And development.
Well said. You said you're not a trained professional?
No, man.
You're not a doctor of psychology or anything?
No, dude. I've had to do some extensive internal dialogue. There was a point in my life, dude, where like I was so, and I think this is part of dealing with post-traumatic stress. I was so combative. Nothing could ever be okay. I had to be pretty much a dickhead about everything. And like nobody, I was the toughest guy in the room, and I was the bravest guy in the room, and I was the most badass guy in the room, and everyone had to know, right? Even when I was like fat, but in my mind I was like, oh yeah, well, like I went to Afghanistan, bro. Like, and then I realized, like, dude, I've become one of the most vile human beings I've ever met. Right? Like, I wasn't like a bad person. Yeah. For me, it was like 2017. It was like a big time for me, where I just realized, like, dude, I suck. Like, I'm a prick. Like, I don't even like myself. And I realized, like, dude, I don't even like myself. How can anyone like me if I'm not even the kind of person that I like? Right? And then, interesting, at the end of that year, I met my wife, who are obviously the person that would become my wife. And that was like a huge change too, because like I liked her so much that I'm gonna fucking cry, dude.
Yeah.
I liked her so much that I wanted her to fucking like me back.
Yeah.
Dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, so like, I had to change.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Women are great for that. They definitely, I've always said, you know, they make us men.
Yeah.
They make us men.
100%,
so,
dude.
Like, oh yeah, you were just angry little boy before that, and
yeah, I was just angry and busted, and I realized like the only person that's gonna fix this is me, dude.
Yeah.
And so I made a choice, like, I've just fix everything, just throw all that shit out. I don't want to be the tough guy. I don't want to be like all that stuff. I just want to be someone that makes everyone, I want to be the person that like I love, I feel joy about, that I know, like, I, you know, I can make myself smarter. I can make myself more emotionally sound, right? And then by becoming that person, I know that I can make other people feel that way too, right? Just like the concept of, have you guys heard of like, you can't pour from an empty vessel? Mm-hmm. So like the vessel is your heart, and I can't give love to anyone else if I don't have the love for me first.
Yeah.
From not knowing you guys to getting to just sit around and hang out for a while, I definitely feel energized and charged up. So like you're not just talking it, but you're walking it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's been a real pleasure to be here and just to see the culture that you guys have all helped create. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm just mad props to all of you, for what you're doing. And, you know, it can probably seem so trivial, just like selling hair ties, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like what you guys have going on through, you know, through, again, the culture that you're creating and like the, you know, the, with like through the podcast and just even just yourselves as a, your own individual entities outside from just the long hairs culture. Like it's just, I'm stoked to know that there's people like you out there, like charging people up.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
It's
just good to be good, man. Yeah. I call it the subtle art of being a good dude.
There you go.
You know,
that's his book. He's coming out with 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just honestly, you keep, you know, just keep letting them talk and you transcribe these episodes. You just, you know, for a second there, I thought I was in a therapy session and I was getting treatment and I'm like, I feel better now.
Well, dude, what's awesome is, you know, having you on, we're hitting on your journey and your fitness, and it's so easy, right, for guys to sit down and talk about fitness and how sick we are and how many weights we can lift and how much we can run and, you know, how badass we are. But like doing this kind of conversation, I think it's far more meaningful.
Yeah, way more badass.
You know, I just feel better right now. I don't even say much during this segment of this podcast, but
go ahead.
You know, yeah, just like feeling it and making me reflect on the traumas that are in my life, that especially the big one, like my dad, like, dude, there's no more time to fucking like wait on this. You know, I know what my bullet is that I'm going to try to fire to do it. And, you know, I've been saying that since January 1st and now we're halfway through the year. I haven't done it. So it's like, I'm motivated right
now. I'm glad it got brought back up. Dog, that's tight. And yeah. And hopefully, I don't know what type of viewership you guys get, but, or, you know, I just, awesome stuff for dudes to be talking about. It's just, you know, a lot of guys, you know, probably not the what you'd expect.
Right.
From a bunch of long haired dudes. But I don't know. I think this is it's a great talk. It's one that I was kind of having one yesterday with someone and just to get that out there and get people kind of like, it's already got you thinking on how you need to take action, whether, you know, for yourself personally or in the hopes to potentially just reach a hand out to someone else, being your father, and just go for it. I hope there's some sort of movement there.
Well, dude, what we are here to do is to inspire confidence, develop masculinity, and foster community amongst guys growing
up. It's happening.
And, you know, you basically described that, and that's our core vision, and that's what we are here to do. And, yes, the products are a part to assist a guy in growing his hair and everything, but I feel like what we are trying to do as the long hairs, it's not just us guys here. It's guys like you. It's just guys in this community to live up to all those things and being a great example of a masculine man and what that is and how that plays out in your life. So, you know, one thing I want to get kind of close on here is your hair journey. We haven't even got into your hair.
Yeah. I'm actually, this is a really important thing. I need to like, and this needs to be discussed. I follow your guys' page and I told you I'm an amateur when it comes to, you know, my hair situation. And your products have definitely helped me kind of get my act together.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. But I saw you post about a keratin treatment.
Yeah.
And I'm interested.
Oh, you talked to this guy up here, Chris.
Yeah.
He's the keratin guy.
I would love to know. And if we want to do this after the show to find out where I need to go in San Diego to get a keratin treatment, that looked incredible. Like what I saw in that is what I would love for my hair to look like and feel like, even if it was just for a couple days, dude, just with the way that I train and my hair is always up, it gets beat down and like I'm sweating in it constantly. So it gets real kind of dried out and, I'm up against a lot, but I want to make sure that I'm taking good care of it. Yeah. And I'm learning more and more with how to do that, especially through you guys. So,
How long have you had long hair now?
4 years.
Okay.
4 years. So
the first couple years, you're kind of just like doing whatever, using the soap, or like you didn't change anything of your routine.
No soap. I just like got my hair wet.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy with how much sweat perspiration you're running through there.
Got my hair wet. Just like, oh, shit, and yeah, and then when I found out about conditioner, I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is awesome. I'm gonna start brushing my hair now.
Yeah,
this is cool. This is this feels good.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'd never had long hair before. And just didn't know,
just like most guys,
didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I would imagine most dudes, like, and that's probably what discourages so many guys from growing their hair out. Sure, it could be awkward for a little bit, but like if it's difficult to manage, or if like your scalp is itchy, or if your hair just feels dry, or even just like, and I saw a little tutorial from you guys on, you know, how to put your hair up so it's not getting all kinked out and stuff like that. Just little things like that. I had no idea about any of this stuff, and just, it'd be by the grace of just some helpful woman that would come by every once in a while and be like, you know, let me help you with this, sir.
Have you tried this?
Yeah, have you tried this? And you're like, oh, well, thank you. God bless.
Sometimes we get flack because we're like hair ties for guys, and we're like a company. We specifically are marketing towards men. But what I always tell people is like, women by default are taught these things throughout their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our demographic is a bunch of dudes that this is either their first time or they're still very early in their hair journey, is what we call it.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to bring men up to the standard that women
and
expect.
men need you guys to like continue to thrive and expand and become more recognized so that there's less dudes struggling with like
bong bong.
Yeah. Dude. Like,
yeah.
And I'm a pretty savvy guy. Like, I like to do things exceptionally well, and I will do my due diligence to figure out like how to execute that particular thing in a way that results in like something quality and that I'm proud of. But when it came to my hair, I was really kind of clueless, and maybe didn't even really feel comfortable enough to go ask other professionals, women really.
Sure. 'Cause
the whole industry is catered to that. So I'm like, whoever's giving you flack, like lay off.
Yeah.
So you're just like, we need the rise of a male dominant, hair situation out there. So like, yeah, keep doing your thing, dude. Don't worry about the hair haters out there. Like,
yeah, it's usually like a response. Because you want to, in order to negotiate with someone, you got to speak their language, right?
Yeah.
So like, I always, because I do a lot of like the responding to messages and comments and stuff on our socials. So I always just say like what we're about. This is like, hey, this is what we're really trying to do. And if at that point there's just dug their heels in the sand, it's like, all right, hey man, best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Clearly we're not the brand for you. So
yeah.
Like no hard feelings.
You're all good. Go to your Pantene Pro V.
I think I've seen some like some posted like screenshots of conversations that go down. Yeah, I appreciate you just standing firm in that.
Heck yeah, well, man. I those are really important for me, because we do get people that are like, oh, this is distasteful and you shouldn't even respond. It's like, yeah, but you got to think, how a lot of people, especially like boys that have long hair, get bullied for their hair. And so something as silly as leaving like a witty response to like a hater comment, we're advocating for our followers that get the flack for having their long hair.
And stand up.
Yeah. And it's like, and like I was bullied, dude. I was like a really skinny kid, and I didn't really grow into myself until like my late teens. And then funny enough, like you, how you started weightlifting, and then that led to you like pursuing like this athletic success. For me, it was the Marine Corps. I joined the Marine Corps because I thought I was proving to everyone yeah. that I was tough, but I was really like proving to myself that I wasn't this person that everybody said I was.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I bullying is very important to me. And so something like people that the comments that we get is the same shit that our followers get, but no one, there's no microphone for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas we have our social have platform, voice. Right? And so like, yeah, we're not going tit for tat. We're leaving like a silly
yeah.
comment on a guy's hairline or just something funny, right?
Just and let them know how ridiculous yeah, the comment is in a witty yeah. way that they can't even come back
yeah,
to.
And it's like, dude, and that's our way of showing the guys that trust us, like, hey, dude, like, we're here for
we
you.
Got your back.
Yeah.
That's what's like, up.
Don't worry about them, you know?
Yeah.
That's tight. Well, again, thank you guys for everything you do. I've learned a ton from you. Great entertainment as well. And I love that you're so visibly and apparently demonstrating your alignment to your guys' mission. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's oozing out of you guys. You're doing incredible stuff. And,
thanks, man.
It's super cool that something as trivial as our hair can bring us all together like mm-hmm. this and get you guys out there just spreading the good word and building people up and I love it. So just super tight. It's dude. Really unlike any other podcast I've been on before. So yeah. This good. Is, you know, everything's always usually so fitness related sure. to anything in my, you know, in my circle. So
yeah,
it's cool to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I said this yet, but like, I felt like if you came on here and all we talked about was like CrossFit, I would have felt like a failure. Like I just wasted your time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, just okay. Here we go. Same podcast yeah, same again. I've done this one 100 times.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man.
Well done.
Yeah, yeah. That's good stuff. We went deep, boys. We went deep.
Yeah, deep, dude.
Well, dude, March 16th, 2024. We would love to have you at the Great Cut here, unless you're going to be on the competition floor that day. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll be in town.
Yeah,
I'm usually in town. January, February ish is kind of when we get here, and I stay till June, July.
Okay, dope.
Yeah. So definitely here in March.
So you'll be
all
in.
For the kids, man.
We got strong coffee already committed. Really? Adam said he will be cool. rolling out or at least have representation.
And if that
event.
Doesn't show so. How inclusive you guys are, like he doesn't even have long hair.
Yeah.
And he's still. Welcomed him.
Yeah, totally.
The show.
Dude, we love
everything. Well, dude, he's a stud. I didn't know much about. I mean, I did some research stuff before, yeah. but sitting down and learning his story, like, what a badass, dude! That guy's awesome.
Is great.
Yeah,
he is great.
Dude. And you guys linked up through the fitness world, or is that how
ish,
you did?
Okay. Ish, yeah. This is kind of a funny story. So Adam had already been formulating and bringing this product, Strong Coffee, to market.
Yeah,
it hadn't quite. Really like gone though.
Okay.
And we were both co-leading a wellness retreat and didn't know each other at all. And I'm in the kitchen. I think it's like, it's probably around breakfast time. And I see these packets of coffee
yeah.
and I whip one up, I drink it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. All right.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And he has it on film.
No way.
I look, I take all of it. No way. So bad. Like, it was clearly for like all the people on this retreat. Yeah. Like, there was enough just for everyone. Totally just took all of it.
Oh my God.
So bad. That's not normal great. Behavior for me.
That's how you guys became friends, right?
And so that's how we became friends. And he was just so stoked that I loved the product so much. And we aligned on a lot of things and wow. we just been good friends and partners since.
Heck yeah. Hell yeah, man.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah,
I'll be at the Great Cut.
Okay.
Yes, dude, love that. Hey, if you feel like donating your hair, excellent. But if you feel like
I got some goals that I want to reach. My goal is to get my hair to touch my waistband.
Okay. You got to talk Del Rubio up here.
So once I accomplish that, like, I'm definitely going to chop it off and, okay, and make a.
Well, we'll give you a waiver of honor donation for 2024. Yeah. And cool. Maybe at the next one, you can get a
no need to
35 inch donation.
Yeah. But yeah, that would be dope, man. That event is magic, dude.
Cool,
just,
and I can totally help you guys with any promotional stuff there. And
for sure,
dude, that'd be awesome.
Got lots of friends here in San Diego that I've acquired over the years that would also be great in assisting this movement and helping you guys continue to grow it. It's an awesome cause. So anything like that, people are usually pretty stoked to get on board with.
Yeah,
so
hell yeah, man.
Especially when you see all the kids, because it all goes to children with hair loss.
Yep.
So you just have like hordes.
They make
of
real
kids.
Hair replacement wigs for children.
Melt your heart and type stuff.
And like,
oh yeah.
And like
oh,
it's a way for these kids not just to get a wig, but like a
hair prosthetic. We like
quality
to call it.
Hair prosthetic.
Yeah.
And like, you know, for guys like us, like, you know, if I didn't have hair at this point in my life, I could deal with it. I'm an adult, right? I can handle it. But you got these kids and like they can't grow hair, dude. And it's like, what a shitty deck of cards they got dealt. And so the hair is like, we are able to donate hundreds of pounds of hair to provide something that we just take for granted to someone that doesn't get to have it.
And it lights these kids up, dude. When they get their boxes and they got, it's just, it's
real
special.
Hair.
It's real special.
Yeah.
Wow.
Love
that. Do you guys have a non-for-profit?
We don't. We work with Children with Hair Loss. They're our charity partner.
Okay.
So the organization is called Children with Hair Loss.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
And they're the actual nonprofit we work close to. We also donate 1% of our top line revenue to them.
That's
to
awesome.
Really support their cause. And they've been growing the last couple of years. It's just been, they're phenomenal people, phenomenal organization. And, it's great. You'll see a lot more of it as we continue to get closer to the event.
Cool. All right. I'll be there in March.
Heck yeah. Awesome. All right, dude. Well, is there anything we could, or anything you want to say here? Websites, you know, handles.
Oh man.
All your businesses.
Man, there's only one thing really that I really like to plug that I didn't get to talk too much about on here. My wife and I, mostly my wife, we've been running a non-for-profit for, oh gosh, probably about 8 years now. And we help individuals with special needs get into gyms, really. And we also help with educating coaches and gym owners on how to comfortably be able to invite athletes or individuals with various special needs into their gyms. Just because I never really had any previous relationships with anyone with autism or Down syndrome or you name it. And so the first time I had an interaction, I kind of made myself look like an idiot. Not like bad. I was just like, hi, I'm Sam. Nice to meet you. And you're just like, you don't. Like I can understand you just fine. Like, oh damn, my bad, dog. So just there was a lot of learning curves for me.
Yeah.
Early on, and let me tell a quick story. So, about 8 years ago, just kind of looking around our gym, and all I see is generally physically fit people. And I asked the question to my staff, "What would happen if someone who was 500 pounds came in here? Mm-hmm. What would happen if someone came in, they had no legs? What would happen if someone came in, if they were deaf or they're blind or just any cognitive or physical impairment you could imagine? What would happen? Would we be able to serve them?" And the answer was no. We would be terrified. And we wouldn't know what to do with them. So we went out and we recruited people that fit these categories, and we invited them into the gym for free so that we could start developing standard operating procedures and how we were going to properly treat them. And through that, which was purely a business decision because we wanted to run a better business, we fell in love with the work that we were doing and saw how underserved individuals with special needs were. And yeah. They had just from a financial level to even just there wasn't a lot for them to do, especially once they graduated like high school.
Yeah.
Like that's really the end of the road, for extracurriculars and such. And education and also, and unless you want to really like spend a significant amount of money to get them involved and stuff, because it takes a lot of work and effort and yeah. care to work with them. And so we saw a huge need there, mostly financially originally. They were in our area, they were cutting programs, and you know, so less and less sports available for them to compete in. And I'm such a psycho, dude. I was just like, well, how much money do you guys need so that you can get these programs back?
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, Sam. Like, I'm like, just say it. Say a number. Is it $30,000, $40,000, $100,000? Is it $1 million? Yeah. Like, how much money do you guys need to make sure these kids can play basketball, bocce ball, bowling, golf, and you name it, and powerlifting and all these things? Like, tell me the number. I'm going to find a way to go get this money for you guys.
Heck yeah.
And we started some fundraisers and ended up, it took off really fast. Nice. Like we were, we probably raised, oh gosh, I bet we cleared $1 million in funds raised in the first probably 3 years.
Wow. Heck yeah.
Just everyone was on board and yeah. And we used that money to, get these athletes into gyms free of cost.
Yeah.
And also, like I said, to help get people like myself, educated sure. and just comfortable with working with athletes that aren't generally physically fit.
Yeah.
So my wife and I started the Dancer Love Foundation. And, if you want to learn more about that, you can just, it's easy Google search. If you even just search my name, like you're going to probably find the Dancer Love Foundation,
okay.
But Google the Dancer Love Foundation. If you want to learn more about it, if you want to support, super, super rad. A little bit of money goes a very long way for us. So like any type of donation is incredibly helpful. And or if you ever want to get involved in any of our fundraisers, my wife and I would love to help you get one of those organized. We even try to make appearances at those. So
nice.
We do these row raisers where we get teams of 10, and ideally at least one athlete, special needs athlete per rower, and a team of 10 rows a marathon. It sounds aggressive when you say marathon, but it's a pretty casual event.
Okay.
It's a very social event. We want there to be opportunities for people like myself, in my younger years, who hadn't had any relationships, with anyone with any special need of any kind, for you to, have that, to yeah. get that relationship, because it will change your heart. Just like I'm sure, you know, the work that you guys do with the Great Cut, I'm yeah. sure that changed. I bet it changed you
oh, yeah.
to some capacity. I bet 100%. It changed your heart when you saw, you know, the effect and the change that mm-hmm. it was happening in these children's lives. So similarly to that, it will be, some of the greatest love that you've ever experienced in your life. If you can, find a way to have a more personal relationship, with someone like this and it'll change your heart forever. And, so if you want to learn more about that, you can find out, maybe you guys can even run like some little hyperlink to it or something there. Like that. And then other than that, no, dude, I don't really have anything. All just right. happy anniversary to my wife, Jennifer.
There we go.
And you guys are super tight. And I'm stoked that y'all are in San Diego. So we'll yeah. definitely have to continue to be homies. And we'll go get some tacos next yeah. Tuesday or something like that.
There we go. Let's go.
I got the spot.
All right.
Well, Scaro's going to get you juiced up with a whole new line of hair care bundle. So your hair woes will be forgotten forever.
See you.
Shout out to you, Sam, for wearing the Island Vibes. Good match.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Sam, you're the man. We really appreciate your time, dude. It's freaking awesome, man. Yeah,
thank you, guys.
All right, boys. That's it for this episode.
Peace out.
Soup.